completely different. Britain and the creation of Israel. So, Mark.
Yes, now we need to set this up.
Don't tell them about the showing of a film last night.
All right. Okay, good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming. I would like to thank Dr. Armour for moderating our session, as well as my colleagues. It's very informative. Thank you. My paper is entitled The British Mandate in Palestine, from the Balfour Declaration to the State of Israel, as you can see on the screen behind me. This paper will analyze the role of the British administration in the creation of Israel, and I have to qualify this, that this is not a political statement of any kind, and I know that this is a very charged issue in the modern world, so I have made a very disciplined effort to limit my focus to the role of Britain and the British administration. Histories written of Israel and the Zionist movement usually begin in 1886 with an outraged account of the Dreyfus Affair, where the founder of Zionism, Theodor Herzl, witnessed the crowd chanting, "Death to the Jews." But since the Jewish question has captivated British and Western imagination since at least the time of William Shakespeare and probably since the beginning of Christendom, this is definitely a longer relationship that bears some study. In his play, The Merchant of Venice, Shakespeare shows that the unique place which Jews held in the English imagination. So surely the Jewish question does not begin in 1947, 1886, or 1917 for that matter. Is part of a longer relationship between Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, which I will touch on later. There is something distinct to this relationship, with each religion defining itself in relation to the other throughout their shared history. Jewish scholars identify themselves as the only ancient people, the only people from the ancient world to survive as a coherent entity. And some Jewish scholars have claimed that it was that they who invented the idea of a shared history. Judaism itself is a scholarly religion in a lot of ways. The British Empire in the early 20th century held colonial possessions across the globe, in addition to the League of Nations mandates that they acquired in the fall of the First World War. Palestine was a mandate which, unlike all the others, was directed with a publicly stated mission statement, the Balfour Declaration of 1917. The declaration opened the door for British support of the Zionist cause, but viewed independently, it is not enough to explain the emergence of a State of Israel. Rather, argue it was the end of the Second World War and the revelation of the Holocaust which allowed for the Zionist movement to successfully pursue a State of Israel in 1948. And this was certainly not the sole intention of the British in 1917 in the Balfour Declaration. Progression towards a Jewish state looked improbable until the British actually handed over the mandate to the United Nations in 1947. The Zionist movement made significant progress towards their goal in the interwar period through a combination of immigration, legal land purchase, and administrative bias in its favor, but the result appeared to be a Jewish homeland in Palestine rather than a new state altogether. The intention of the British was to settle a Jewish home in Palestine, not of Palestine. Early Jewish thinkers saw the Zionist movement as a cultural renaissance rather than a nationalist movement. Certainly, modern skeptics have claimed that petroleum and resource wealth were the primary concerns of Western powers in the Middle East. However, there is certainly something more to it, especially in the case of Israel. Anti-Semitism, economics, clashes of ideology and theology are all important strands of discourse in the Palestinian question. In addition, there's an element of strategic geopolitical importance to Palestine to maintain the integrity of the Suez Canal. The fall of the Ottoman Empire after the First World War drove the Allied European powers to reappraise their strategy on the Middle East. The rivalry over who would assume the hegemonic role in the Middle East led to Germany and Turkey, the remains of the Ottoman state, developing a special friendship. Specifically, the Baghdad Railway Project threatened to upset the balance of power in the region. Because of this threat, in the interwar period, there is a very palpable attitude amongst British policymakers that the security situation in the Middle East needed to be resolved quickly, and a pro-Western, Jewish-dominated Israel seemed like a reasonable enough idea by this logic. Security of the Suez could be achieved at no cost to British taxpayers, along with French cooperation, and the Middle East would become a stable, profitable, and strategically viable region. And perhaps as important, by not providing economic and military strength to Germany or Russia, the British and France, would instead capitalize on the rich resources of the New Mandates. As well, as the well-funded Jewish settlers amassed a significant amount of land, hostility from the Arab majority also grew. And in the Zionist view, they felt that, now this is a quote, as Englishmen occupied the lands of the American Indian through their superior ability to utilize them in their lands, so someone was going to inevitably occupy Palestine. The Jews did not, the Italians inevitably would. During the interwar period, as Arab and Jewish communities became more and more politicized in Palestine, land and property rights became the focus of political action. The Second World War would only solidify the Zionist cause in Britain, as the Holocaust, as well as thousands of refugees literally throwing themselves at British administrative doors, provided the final blows to those who opposed a pro-Zionist movement. The efforts of Zionists to acquire Palestinian land in the interwar period gave the Zionist lobby in Britain a very strong tool to negotiate for their cause, and after the revelation of the Holocaust to the world, the establishment of a Jewish homeland became reality. British colonial legal records do not characterize political action as simply Arab against Jewish, however, but rather as government against landowners. Absentee Arab landowners were a problem in Palestine, and many of these landowners saw themselves on the other side of the new borders drawn at the end of the empire, particularly in the new state of Transjordan. This is the initial British mandate in Palestine, and you'll notice it does include a large area of what would become Transjordan, as you can see on this slide. And now, the orange outlined area is the area that the Zionist movement was directed at. They wanted to acquire the entire area. And what ended up happening was many of the wealthy Arab landowners were told that they owned land now in Transjordan as opposed to Palestine once the borders were drawn. The bulk of land disputes in the interwar period took place within Arab communities. However, there was a growing perception in the Arab world that Jewish land purchased from Arabs was getting administrative preference. Regardless of the Balfour Declaration, land ownership in Palestine was undergoing large-scale upheaval. What the Balfour Declaration did accomplish was to allow for certain administrative and policy biases, such as giving Jewish interests preferential bidding on key territories. Whereas Arabs were often caught up in tribal rivalries, which prevented united action and would have stopped Jewish purchase, because this was often instigated by the British that they would be infighting. Colonial law itself was seen as discriminatory to the Arabs, because in Islamic society, judiciary power was traditionally vested in the ulema and religious theological teachers. Perhaps the most influential policy announced in the Balfour Declaration was the appointment of Hebrew as a national language. For such a small percentage of the population to have administrative activities in their language was a huge advantage. Arab nationalism developed a stronghold in the British Mandate of Mesopotamia, or Iraq, where Arabs called for a purely Arab state, which emphatically included Palestine. As you can see here, this was the part of the Middle East that was promised to the Arabs when they rose against the Ottoman Sultan in the First World War. The black line denotes the edge of their territory of influence, where the purple would be actually the land that they were allowed to develop in the settlements. British support for the Arabic uprising against the Ottoman Empire has long been romanticized, both in film, literature, media. Britain's effort to stir up Arab revolts highlights the paradox of British policy at the time. To agitate for Arab unity against the Arabs or against the Ottomans, they often promoted national self-determination and decried the evils of Ottoman domination. These arguments lost credibility with the revelation of the Sykes-Picot Agreement. Arabs had been betrayed, and pan-Arabic nationalism, whipped up by the British, was to be crushed by the division of the Middle East into spheres of European influence divided into new nation-states. In this period, Arabs were characterized in the British public imagination as a simple, tranquil people who desired to sit and smoke their hookah pipes and maintain their traditions. Britain would try to turn Islam against itself, in essence leaving it impotent and occupied by infighting. Much like the Catholic Church had been during the Avignon captivity of the Pope in the late medieval period. The Balfour Declaration was only the first blow to Arab nationalism, and when the Sykes-Picot Agreement came out by the newly Soviet Russia, Arab betrayal by the British undid much of the work of T.E. Lawrence and other representatives of Britain during the First World War. The British mandate in Palestine was guided by the principles of the Balfour Declaration, but it was certainly not a straightforward, linear progression towards a Jewish state. As the British made an effort to uphold the non-discriminatory clauses of the Balfour Declaration towards the Palestinians, continual Jewish immigration and agitation in Britain steadily grew. With the revelation of the Sykes-Picot Agreement, the true intention of the Western European interests in the Middle East became apparent. The interests of the Arab population were secondary at best, and the promises made to them seemed to be little more than empty rhetoric. The White Paper of 1939 was seen as a reversal of Balfour, the declaration, or in the eyes of Zionists. The White Paper was a reaction on the part of the British administration to the Arab revolts, which swept the Middle East from 1936 to 1939, and the British moved to restrict Jewish immigration to appease Arabs. The mandate of Palestine, given to the British after the war, was intended as to be a stopgap measure, temporarily in place until Palestine reached the level of development to stand on its own as an independent nation-state. The view of the Palestinians as a childlike race was to be held by the British throughout the mandate period, and doubtlessly influenced British policy in that regard. The Balfour Declaration provided for the favoring of Jewish interests over Arab, but it is evident by the White Paper that this is not an even policy that was enforced across the board. Much like the balancing act which the colonial administration played in India, in Palestine they would attempt, in India leading into partition, they would attempt the same thing in Palestine as they saw their options narrowly grow, rapidly narrow as the pressures from both sides grew. Muslim population of the British Empire were the source of a great deal of anxiety on behalf of the British, since the Ottoman Sultan had called for a global jihad in 1916, and this latent fear would influence British administrative action. The Second World War and the Holocaust occupy a nearly mythological place in the Western imagination. Through media, literature, and academic studies, these events have defined the modern world. Technological advances in communication, photography, and film allowed the Second World War and the Holocaust to be documented very well, and as such, art and literature based on them have been enshrined in a special place in Western culture. Zionist lobbying in the interwar period must have haunted British policymakers when images and reports of the Holocaust reached the outside world. What was already a powerful lobby became an unstoppable force. During the Second World War, the threat of German invasion was very real, both in Britain itself and in Palestine. And it was here that militancy in the Jewish community saw its roots. Jewish nationalism was to develop as a reactionary defensive sentiment in Palestine. The national character of Israel was born in this defensive stance. The militant nature of Israeli society was born from the legacy of centuries of persecution and the very real threat of looming attack. With this new reactionary militant nationalism rapidly developing, it became harder and harder for the British administration to maintain the promises of the Balfour Declaration or even to maintain a viable social order within Palestine. Besieged by Jewish refugees fleeing from Europe, as exemplified by the case of the Exodus, which was turned away from refuge in Britain, public opinion quickly turned against the British for blocking Jews, and the administration was forced to find a new solution. After years of internal struggle under the mandate, in 1947, the British took the matter to the United Nations Special Committee on Palestine to seek a solution. And you see the result right here. The red areas denote the Arab lands, whereas blue is the lands given to the Israelis. bankrupt after two devastating wars and bogged down with decolonization worldwide, in addition to the new challenges posed by the post-war period, the British government cooperated wholeheartedly with the creation of Israel by the Allied powers. Even as neighboring states challenged its existence, Israel was able to develop a strong military, largely through Western arms and support, and mount a counter-offensive, firmly establishing itself as a regional power. As you can see in this picture here, this is what occurred after, in the War of Independence, after the UN Resolution 181. And you can see in the original UN resolution, especially the lands around Jerusalem were under international mandate. After the War of Independence, all this land was occupied by the Israeli army, and Israel expanded its territory quite significantly. Israel would fill all the roles which the Western European powers had for the last 50 years in the Middle East: regional stability, secure access to the Suez, as well as economic benefits for all the allies. At least on paper, this argument became popular amongst the allies. With the image of the Holocaust on one hand and the real tangible benefits of having a pro-Western Israel in the Middle East on the other, Zionist goals were achieved and largely uncontested outside of the region. The support of American Jews cannot be understated in this regard. Their financial support was even more significant as British capital dried up. Indeed, it would be the United States President Harry S. Truman who would have the final approval of the United Nations resolution which brought Israel from dream into reality. And it's noted that Truman was notoriously conflicted over whether or not to support this because he was aware of this, the power that the American Jewish community had acquired, especially in the Democratic Party. Seen in this light, it is apparent that at this point, the British influence faded into the background and the forces which it had released took on a life of their own. Yet we cannot absolve the British of blame. Faced with limited options, the British policy was forced to cut and run. Zionism was a movement which took nearly 50 years to reach its goal. It was a movement which depended on more on international support than action within Palestine. But throughout those 50 years, it never enjoyed mass support globally or even within the Jewish community. Many Jews felt that if they identified themselves as Zionists, they would only attract even more discrimination, and therefore they either did not support the movement or did so in secret. It took the Second World War for the Zionist cause to materialize, and the State of Israel was the result. Histories written of Israel often claim that the emergence of their state was never assured, and it was a constant struggle to achieve. It was through the financial and logistical support of Jews the world over, specifically those in the United States, which agitated in favor of a Jewish homeland. The British were aware of this sentiment, and British policy came to reflect the desire to hold on to Palestine for as long as possible. The desire was abandoned after the Second World War bankrupted Britain. The Zionist movement seemed to be the best way to maintain security interests of the British without losing influence to any other single nation. The Suez Crisis later also highlighted the impotence of a bankrupt Britain in world affairs, with American interests becoming predominant in the post-war world. Regardless of what had been promised during the Arab uprising, the flow of petroleum from the Middle East and the need to maintain pro-Western military in the region would be the most influential and practical reasons for Western support of Israel. But these alone do not explain the turmoil and strife which resulted from its creation. The 50 years following the birth of Israel would be as turbulent as the 50 years which it took to create it. And while this conflict had been prolonged by actions on both sides of the dispute, there has been a definite link to the past, both in how the conflict is viewed and attempts to resolve it, particularly in controlling Jerusalem. It's false to paint the picture that this was a simple linear progression and that the Balfour Declaration was a logical precursor to the creation of Israel. While the Jewish homeland promised in the Balfour Declaration would eventually become Israel, this was not to be the case until the end of the Second World War and the truth of the Holocaust was revealed. Perhaps as significant as the Balfour Declaration to the Zionist cause was the redrawing of the map in the Middle East in 1919. The absentee landlords now residing outside of the newly drawn borders of Palestine had their land sold to Jewish immigrants, thus reshaping the balance of power in Palestine and the Middle East.